Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good morning. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is poker author Ed Miller. We'll be discussing his new book called The Course, Serious Hold'em Strategy for Smart Players. We'll be talking to Ed in a few moments. The Plain Ridge Park Casino in Massachusetts will be opening June 24th. That's about a month and a half from now. It's a Penn National casino. This is opening earlier than I expected. What about you, Richard?
Yeah, I much earlier than I expected, so that's a good thing. I just, these things kind of go cyclically for years. Table games players wanted to be there when new casinos opened because often there were weak games to be found. But now it seems like table game players really want to stay away the first few days, just because the casinos know that all the table games players show up for the opening and are there ready to bar everybody on site. For a table games player, I would not recommend you go for the opening, but it seems the opposite is true for video poker players. Often there's good stuff at the beginning, right?
Yeah, frequently. I'm not flying to Massachusetts for this, but like when the SLS opened up a few months ago, the pay schedules were considerably looser than they were the following week. And there were some of us who went in and hit them pretty hard and got lucky, and then all the pay schedules got down. And so then sometimes the slot director at a new place was the assistant slot director at his old place. And he doesn't know the difference between an assistant slot director and a slot director. And so he needs to have his clock cleaned a few times before he learns kind of the ropes. And so a lot of them think, well, this is a pretty good, the looser the pay schedules, the more people we'll get, which is absolutely true. And those of us who can identify good opportunities can take advantage of that. So were I living closer, I would definitely be there for the opening.
Right, and they often want to send out the best mailers in the beginning, too, to get people to come in. And so, I agree with you. If I were living closer, I would show up and probably avoid the tables and hit the video poker. So.
Yeah, although it's Penn National. Penn National is an experienced casino operator. They're not known for loose video poker. But you don't know what this particular slot director is going to do. So, the Downtown Grand, which is used to be called Lady Luck, they're having a new members promotion in May. I signed up under new members promotion several months ago, and which I was very happy about, although I kind of wish this one was around at the time. Tell us about this one, Richard.
So this one is 100% rebate on $1,000. They kind of didn't do it very well. But the deal is you go sign up and you have 24 hours, for slots only. If you lose up to $1,000, 24 hours after you sign up, they will give you half of it back as free play. And then, if you are local, then a week from Monday you get another $250, and a week from Monday after that another $250. If you are out of state, then the first of the next month you get $250, and the first of the next month after that you get another $250.
So, as free play.
As free play, yeah. Yeah.
And you're playing your free playthrough, and the best game there last time I checked was 8-5 bonus, which is 99.2 almost, and which is close enough to 100% that a 100% rebate is pretty strong.
Yeah, no, 100% rebate is always pretty strong. I am much more interested in speed than squeezing every last dollar out of the. So I went around looking for blackjack machines. I couldn't find a machine that had video blackjack for more than a dollar. I played some bad pay schedules just to bet more and get through it quicker.
So how long did it take you to lose your $1,000 when you were there?
Oh, at least 30 seconds or a minute.
Uh-huh.
They do have some high limit slot machines. So,
very good.
Yeah.
Takes longer than that to walk from the parking lot to the...
It did. Yes, absolutely.
All right. Let's talk to our guest. Ed Miller specializes in writing about no limit hold'em games. He's one of the best in this particular niche. And today we'll be talking about his brand new book. It's his ninth one. It's called The Course: Serious Hold'em Strategy for Smart Players. Ed Miller, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you very much.
Our vast crowd in here, of which actually is zero, is really happy to see that Ed is back. Okay.
I guess I should put on headphones, huh? We have sound effects?
We do have sound effects, although with my last comment, we might have killed the sound effects. I'm not sure. Over the last few weeks, there has been a man versus machine competition in Heads Up Modified No Limit Hold'em at the Rivers Casino in Pittsburgh. After 80,000 hands and $170 million of play money being bet, the players, there were four of them, were ahead by a total of $740,000. The scientists who designed the program are calling this a statistical tie. But to me, it sounds like the players kicked ass.
Was Manny Pacquiao one of the...
I don't know. Now, especially since every day you looked at it, the score kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Now, the sponsors did pay $100,000 to each of the players, which was the condition if they won. But they're insisting it was really a tie. Now, I plan to take this approach as well. I had a large $10 bet each with Munchkin and Jeff Wong, and I will pay off, even though it was a statistical tie. Now, Ed Miller, this whole thing was surprising to me. Heads up limit hold'em has been solved. The no limit raising options were very limited. It was like you could do a min raise, a half pot, a full pot, a double pot, all in. That seemed a small enough set of options that a computer should be able to solve it. But although it was statistical tie, it wasn't close. The players creamed the computer. Now, in addition to being a poker player and author, you have 2 degrees from MIT, which possibly gives you some insight into this. So how come no limit hold'em is so much more difficult to solve, or modified no limit hold'em is so much more difficult to solve than limit hold'em?
Yeah, so I'm not surprised by the result. I was expecting the human players to win.
They didn't win. It was a statistical tie.
Which is, just for the record, I know y'all are making fun of it, but statistical tie is ludicrous. This is a ludicrous concept, and already that raises a red flag for me that they would even claim that. So I definitely was expecting the humans to win. It's a lot harder because in limit hold'em, you only have 3 choices at any juncture. You can fold, you can call, you can raise. In regular no limit, you have potentially hundreds of different choices at any point. Or even, if you play on a computer often, it's down to the penny. So it's literally tens of thousands of different options. This was a limited subset where they said, okay, well, you can't choose any bet size. You have to pick from these 6, I guess it was, or whatever. But even so, that blows up the decision tree, right? It's a big difference to have 3 different options and to have
8
or whatever it was. Yeah. So, I mean, that, because that's exponential, right? It's a tree. So after every 3rd option, right, that's a whole new tree. So having 3 options makes a space a certain size. Having 8 options makes a space like much, much bigger. I'm talking about like a decision space, sort of a mathematical decision space. And that really is a big factor in what makes these games difficult for computers. The bigger the space, the harder it is for the computer to analyze. My guess is, you know, because the limit hold'em strategy was already enormous. It takes like 15 terabytes or something of data to enumerate the limit hold'em strategy. This would be monstrous, you know, for the same, like if they did the strategy to the same sort of specifications as the limit hold'em strategy, it would be, I mean, I don't know how big, I haven't done the math, but it would be just ridiculously enormous sized strategy, which they didn't do. I'm almost guaranteed they didn't do.
Well, it was supposed to be 10 to the 161st decision.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, it, you know, so to have, you know, that strategy, basically the computer had to take a shortcuts, uh-huh, you know, to create its strategy. And I just don't have any faith in the shortcuts. I mean, the people are...
Well, they also did another thing, I think, to try to help the computer, which was... Every hand, they started over with 200 big blinds.
Right.
Because if you take that into the mix as well...
That makes it easier.
Right.
Easier correct. For the computer.
Yeah, easier for the computer. Yeah. Right.
Well, and the players.
Easier for the players, but the players will be used to the variations in play that come when you change stack sizes for a computer. Again, that's an entire new variable space, you know, that they got rid of. So they did a lot of things to try to cut down the size of the game artificially, and yet... It's still just a ridiculously enormous game, much bigger than Limit Hold'em. And so, you know, I just made assumptions about I don't know anything about this particular research project, but I do know a little bit more about the Limit Hold'em project. It was 15 years. They'd been working on it for a long, long time. They'd been refining it. They'd already tested it against human players 8 years ago. You know, so they were much further along in their journey, I guess. For that project, you know, whereas this project, you know, this was the first time, as far as I know, they tested it against human players. And yeah, I mean, I was just expecting the humans to kill the bot, to be honest. You know, it's No Limit's just a much, 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 you know, like 10 to the 50 muches, you know, harder game for a computer. And even when you cut down the game and even when you make these simplifications to try to make it easier for the computer, it's still much, much harder for a computer. So I did not expect the computer to have success on its kind of first coming out here.
Yeah, although it had beaten other computers. So
sure.
It was the best of the untested computer programs. All right. Okay, you have a new book called The Course. Of course. No, Serious Hold'em Strategy for Players. Now, how is this book different from your previous ones? And who is your core audience?
Okay, so this book is—I would say this is a very practically focused book. Some of my books are a little more theoretical. Some are more practical. This one's very practical. So the goal here is to take you as a live No Limit Hold'em cash player. You can be fairly new, so you could be at the 1-2 level. You've only been playing for a couple months. You know, it assumes you know the basics. You know how to bet. You know that flushes beat straights, blah, blah, blah. But— It can start you there, or it can start you, if you're a little more experienced, like you're a 2-5 player, it can start there for you. And it takes you through all the skills, one by one, the skills that I believe are necessary to beat each level of the game, starting at 1-2, and then the skills to beat 2-5, and then the skills to beat 5-10. So it's a linear progression through skills. And it's, as I said, it's very, very practical. So the goal is you can read the book, you can practice the skills, and then you'll see results.
Yeah, I thought you really nailed it. I mean, you really hit the nail on the head. I think it's exactly what anyone that I know, because I get this question all the time from blackjack players who say, I'm thinking about taking up poker. Absolutely, this book would be the book I would tell them to start with.
For sure, yeah. And that's exactly kind of the target. But it's also targeted toward a little more experienced players who aren't yet – I mean, anyone who's playing poker and serious about it but not yet winning at the 5-10 level, this book is definitely appropriate for. But it's certainly appropriate for anyone who's coming to poker from a different background like blackjack or, you know, another game.
Yeah. I think the one danger is that – I think people can read this book and start beating 1-2 very quickly, and the danger would be they don't go any further.
Right.
You know what I mean? They start making money, and they're like, oh, now I know what I'm doing. So.
Right. Yeah, that's always the danger, and that happens constantly with poker players. I mean, that's why – I mean, that's why money is so easy to win at this game, because people do stagnate. They get to 1-2. They learn. I have three. So I have 10 skills in the book. Three of them I consider 1-2 skills. So I say, if you learn these three skills, you can beat 1-2. But the thing is, if that's all you've mastered, if you're good at those, but that's it, and then you try to sit in a 5-10 game, you're going to get killed, because those extra seven skills are extremely important and become even more important once you do move up into those tougher games. And I see it all the time, where people kind of get to a level where they get comfortable at, they have some success at, and they kind of feel like, well, that's it. They figured it out, you know, whereas this game is actually really, really complicated. You know, if you go all the way down the rabbit hole, as I was talking about the, you know, computer and so forth. And, you know, no, you haven't learned it all. There's always more to learn about this game. There's always the next level. There's always this huge kind of universe of skills that you probably haven't even considered. So the book is trying to show you, you know, in a straightforward way as possible, at least those skills necessary to get to kind of the higher stakes cash games in live card rooms.
Let's talk about some of those lessons. Obviously, we can't go through all of them here. But actually, before the first lessons, you say that when you have a student, one of the first questions you ask them is, if they're going to be a winning player, where did that money they're winning going to come from? So why don't you take us through that discussion? It'll give players a flavor of what the book is.
Sure. So yeah, students come to me, you know, and I say, you know, are you a winner? You know, and some of them say no. But, you know, most of them say, yeah, I win. I just want to move up and I want to do better, you know. And then I say, okay, well, if you win – And it's often true. I mean, it's not, you know, I don't think they're lying. You know,
some of them are.
Some of them are. Some of them are optimistic, I would say. But yeah, no, plenty of them do win. But then I say, okay, well, why do you win? What is it that you do that makes money accumulate in your stack? And it's amazing. Almost none of the people I ask this question to can give me an answer I think is satisfactory, you know, which is sort of amazing that you can have someone who wins at a game, and yet if you say, well, what is it that you're doing specifically that makes you win, they really just can't tell me. And the answer I get the most is some variation of folding, right? So they say, you know, oh, I'm patient, or I, you know, I don't chase draws, or I, you know, I play tight, or, you know, I just wait for the good spots, or whatever it is. It kind of all boils down to folding, which is certainly an important skill, and it is the main component of skills 1 and 2 in the book. So it's definitely a foundational skill to learn how to fold. But the thing is, folding does not make you money. If you fold, you lose the hand, the money goes away. So it does not make you money. And in fact, my definition of what makes money is, this is a thing that you can do and that makes money. And then if you do more of this thing, you will make more money. And if you do even more of this thing, you will make even more money. And folding definitely does not fit that description, because I promise if you fold more, you will not win more. So yeah, that's sort of the
well, fallacy. A lot of players, if they fold more than they're full playing now, they will win more.
Correct. Yes. But once they get to that sort of good amount of folding, they can't start keep folding more. And yeah, that doesn't work. So. There's more to it.
All right. Another, so one of your key rules is only play strong hands. And so players can kind of guess what, you know, if you start with a pair of aces, that's a good hand to start with. But, so they can kind of guess with that. And your next point is, when you enter a pot, you should always raise. So in this particular case, you don't go through the exceptions, but you just say, the exceptions are for later. Right now, always raise when you enter a pot.
Correct.
Why is that important?
All right. So this strategy, what it does is, pre-flop strategy is what we're talking about. So we're talking about on the first two cards, if no one has raised before you, I say, these are the hands you should play, and you should raise all the time. This is the main reason. So where does the money come from? My answer in the book is that the money comes from people who are playing too many hands pre-flop, But it doesn't stop there. It has to do with how they get rid of those hands after the flop, because what it means to play too many hands pre-flop is that you have too many weak hands once the flop comes. You know, King Jack 4 comes and you've got 7-5 or whatever it is. You've got too many of those just total junker hands. And the question is, what does this player do with those junk hands? And there's three options. They can call with them, they can fold with them, or they can try to bluff with them. Those are the options, right? That's how you get rid of bad hands. You got to do one of the three. And players have biases toward one or the other. But if you play in card rooms, especially at the 2-5 level, but even at the 1-2 level against anyone who's, you know, reasonably competent at the game, they're going to fold most of those hands. That's what they've learned to do. That's how they've learned not to get destroyed playing poker, is they've learned if you miss the flop, fold. Well, that's something that I want to take advantage of. They're playing too many hands, and then they're building up pots pre-flop with these bad hands, and then they're willing to fold them after the flop. So the reason to raise preflop, I would say the number one reason, is you want to build that pot preflop, because if they're going to make a bad fold on the turn, you'd rather they make a bad fold in a $150 pot than in a $40 pot. So if you limp, you keep that pot small, you keep the stakes small, and you reduce the size of that error that's coming down the line. Whereas if you raise and you kind of bloat the pot to begin with, and it's not to your disadvantage because you're only playing the better hands to begin with, then also that error on the turn is going to be a much larger sized error in terms of money.
Actually, that isn't really an error for them to fold at that point. The error is for them to call the raise in the first place.
Yeah, it's kind of both. It depends. They make two errors. One is that they call too much preflop, but then even after they call too much preflop, they're still folding too many hands. Like, yeah, they're still folding too large a percentage of hands, even, you know, if I put it this way, if I showed them my cards and strategy and said, this is what I'm doing, like, they wouldn't be folding those hands anymore. Yeah.
All right, now a third major point. We're still talking about the really elementary ABC poker, is you don't pay off to big bets,
right?
Which is basically says if somebody bets big on the turn of the river, you should believe that they have the hand that they say they have. And if you can't beat a goodly percentage of those hands, this is currently undefined, but if you can't beat a significant proportion of them, you should fold. Talk to us about that.
Okay, so this is an observation of how people actually play. So this is a point where the book goes to the practical and not the theoretical, because theoretically this is not a thing. But practically what happens is that if you play at the 1-2 and 2-5 level, you're going to play against other players who have certain strategies. And in general, the overwhelming majority of those players, especially again at those lower stakes, are going to have strategies where they don't bluff often enough for big money. So they'll bluff, you know, $20, they'll throw a bluff out. Nobody seems to want the pot. Let me try $20. You know, or maybe they'll even follow that up with $40. But what they won't do is then follow that up with a $250 kind of all-in bluff on the river. Like, they just don't do it. Or at least they don't do it as often as they should, because if you look at, again, going back to theoretical, if you look at how often people should be doing that in this game, it's actually pretty often, because that offers you 2-to-1 odds, which means that they should be bluffing about 1 in 3 times. That's sort of the optimal bluffing frequency. If there's $200 in the pot and they bet $200, like, they should be bluffing about 1 out of 3 times. But the reality is that real players in these games don't bluff even remotely that often. And because they're not bluffing that often, you shouldn't call them to try to sniff out the bluffs, because you're going to end up losing more to the good hands than you are going to win from the pots where you do catch them. So as soon as people stray a little bit less than that optimal bluffing frequency, your attempts to catch them bluffing should go to 0.
All right. And they're going to get away with it sometimes.
Yep.
So be it.
Right. It's better off to let them get away with it 10% of the time than to be paying them off 90% of the time.
The one exception that I see when I play is it seems like these low-limit players want to play any 2 suited cards. Mm-hmm. And so once in a while, when they didn't catch the flush on the end, you know, they'll throw out a big bet as a bluff.
Yep.
And often those are fairly easy to suss out.
Yes. Yes. I would start with a don't ever pay off, you know, rule. And then, yeah, there are some exceptions, especially combo draws. People like to, the higher the frustration. So this is how low stakes players bluff. The higher their frustration factor, the more likely they are to just say, ah, and just push all the money in. So like, if they had a huge draw, like an open ended straight draw and a flush draw, you know, and they're like, ah, how did I miss that? and you know, smoke's coming out of their ears. That's when they bluff. But, you know, if they were playing a more theoretically correct strategy, they'd be bluffing not just then, but in a lot of other circumstances too.
All right. So we have spoken about the first three skills a little bit. If you, if what he just said on the radio made sense to you, then you probably get some value out of this book. Both Richard and I recommend it. Now let's talk about some other subjects. We had Jeff Huang on the show about a month ago. I think he might be a friend of yours, Ed. He said that if you apply the 100 pages of his book to low limit, to low stakes, limit hold'em high low split.
No, Omaha. Limit Omaha high low
split. Yes, limit Omaha high low split, sometimes called Omaha 8. You'll be able to beat that game, possibly at the level of $10 an hour, if you're playing the 3-6 game at the Orleans here in Las Vegas. We received an email at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. from a listener who suggested playing limit hold'em for those stakes is virtually a guaranteed loser, and somebody would have to be very good to even make $1 per hour at the Orleans game. The listener suggested that the chances for success at low limit games are much better in the low limit games than they are in the limit versions. Now, agreeing with the listener means you disagree with your friend Jeff Huang. Where do you weigh in on whether it's $10 an hour or $1 an hour, or do you care?
I don't care. I'm gonna split the difference, I guess.
$5.50 an hour.
Exactly. It depends completely on how bad your opponents are. They're always gonna be bad in a 3-6 game. The question is, are they bad or are they atrocious? Are they bad because they fold too much, which is not good if you're trying to beat a rake? Or are they bad because they just pile enormous amounts of money in the pot inappropriately, which is what you're looking for if you're trying to beat that rake at the low limit. So it depends on how they're bad exactly and exactly how bad they are. And it also depends on how big the rake is. Normally, I advise people, don't worry about the rake. Your goal is to move up to stakes where the rake kind of doesn't factor in. But at 3-6 limit, you know, they're raking, you know, in Vegas, they'll rake up to $4 a hand. And in some places like California, they'll rake $6 or $7 a hand off the top, you know, with no matter how much betting there is in California. And
we should point out that the emailer was from California, where he is, you know, experienced with much higher rakes.
Yeah, so it definitely depends on exactly the specifics of the rake structure and exactly how bad people are and exactly the ways they're bad, you know, about whether you're going to hit that zero or 10 or whatever in between. The bottom line, though, is I would definitely do not advise anyone to quit their job to play 3-6 limit hold'em. It's just not big enough. When I started playing for a living, I started playing at the 10-20 level. So that was, and to me, that was the level that was the first stakes where it was reasonable to think you were going to make any kind of significant money playing limit. I was playing limit hold'em at the time.
Now, do you agree that low limit, no limit, is more profitable than low stakes limit in most of these games?
Yes, because the rake, and again, it also still depends on how bad your opponents are, the way they're bad, and the rake structure. So in California, it's going to be more of a struggle. If you want to try to beat a 1-2 game at the Commerce Casino in LA, that's going to be trouble because the rake structure is high, as I described, and they also limit the buy-ins, which prevents you from winning more money.
Well, this is another thing that he wrote about, right? Or was that a different
email? This is a different email. Let me ask that as a separate question.
Okay.
When we're through with this one, are we through?
Well, yeah. And, you know, it just depends on the structure. But I would say in some structures of no-limit games, you're not going to win very much at all playing 1-2, and in other structures you could win as much as 10 to 15 an hour, I would say.
So now let's take here in Las Vegas.
Yes.
And the 1-2 or 1-3, they
yes.
have that as well, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what can somebody earn per hour here in Vegas playing.
You could probably earn a strong player for the level could earn maybe $10 to $15, and when I call it, maybe call it 10. And when I say strong for the level, I mean it's not Phil Ivey, because Phil Ivey doesn't play 1-2 is what I mean. So if you belong at that level, if that's kind of the level where you're playing, then, you know, maybe $10 an hour is reasonable. Who knows what Phil Ivey would win in those games? It would be more, I don't care.
Yeah, right.
It's sort of a theoretical exercise, but yeah.
And at 2-5, what could?
I say 25 for 2-5. That's a number that's achievable. I know people who have achieved that. If you sit around a card room long enough, you'll hear numbers like 50 and 70 and 80. And I know of exactly one person who has played many, 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 many hours of 2-5, and I have documented results of $70 an hour. And he was exceptional, and he doesn't play poker anymore. He does other things. But 25 is a good number.
You know, when people start throwing around numbers about what they're earning, the first question I always ask them, regardless of what the game is do you keep records?
Right.
And it's funny because blackjack players tend to keep meticulous records. Poker players seem to keep none.
Right.
I mean, many of them.
Yeah.
So.
And it should be the other way around. It's like in poker players, it would be useful to know that this guy, George, who's a regular in your game, does this on the flop, and he tends to call too much on these kind of things, and keep notes on these individual players. That would be useful information.
Right.
And if you have any kind of large number of players that you regularly play with, your memory's going to be faulty. So records would be good. All right. Now, we are briefly alluded to this other email we got, also to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. This was directed especially for Ed Miller when we announced he's coming on the air. It seems that the $1, $2, no-limit hold'em games in Los Angeles card rooms have a maximum buy-in of $40, whereas in Vegas, the max buy-in for the same game could be $300. Is your book called The Course equally applicable to both kinds of games?
No, it's not. It's definitely more geared toward the deeper stacked game. When the buy-in is only $40 in a 1-2 game, that's a 20 big blind game, and that's a game that you're going to play frequently pre-flop and then on the flop. So in other words, there's going to be, you know, if I say you should raise. So let's say you raise to $10 pre-flop and then three people call you. So there's $40 in the pot, and, well, there's 30 because the house takes like a ridiculous percentage. But anyway, so say there's $40 in the pot, and then you only have $30 left. That's only one bet. So you're only going to make a bet on the flop. Someone's going to call, and then you're going to turn your hands over and see who wins. In the course, I'm talking a little bit more about how to deal with games where people play deeper and there's action on all the streets. So I'm not saying don't read it if you play in those games, but it's definitely not written with those games in mind.
All right. The last time you were on the show, you told us you regularly created pay-to-read content for redchippoker.com. Are you still involved with that? And who are the players who could get the most value out of that site?
Yeah, so redchippoker.com, it's actually mostly a video training site. There's also articles, but the main content are poker videos. The target audience is similar for who's supposed to read my books. Generally live, no-limit cash game players at the 1-2 to 5-10 level is the target audience. I'm not the only coach. I have three partner coaches. And then we have guest coaches also. So, and there's some online, there's some tournaments, but the main focus, of the site is going to be on improving your live no limit cash game play and results at those kind of card room levels. And, right now I'm doing a video series that is a companion series to my new book, The Course. So my seventh video is coming out on June 1st in the series. The series is going to be about, I don't know, 12 videos or 13. It's one for each of the 10 skills and then a couple other videos. And the goal of the video series is not to duplicate the content of the book, but to sort of supplement or complement the content. So it follows the same structure of the book, but I offer a little bit of a different take on each idea, you know, in the video series. So, you know, for people who learn better watching or hearing, you know, or better reading, it's going to kind of help you out both ways.
You go through sample hands and stuff?
Yep.
And you recommend players read the book before they do this or after, any order they want?
Honestly, I think either order. I mean, I started the video series about 6 months ago before the book was out, so it was kind of at that point almost teaser videos for what the book was going to be about. But the book's out now. It's available on my website, which is edmillerpoker.com, where you can get it at Amazon. You can just search Ed Miller, the course, you'll find it. And so now that the book's out, you know, why not read the book? You know, it's there. All the videos are not done yet. I'm hoping to have them finished up in the next few months.
When you said teaser videos, you did keep your clothes on. All right. Now, and in your book, you talk about Tommy Angelo, and you recommended his writings. I've never heard of him. Who is he?
All right. So Tommy is a character. So he is a fellow who I think he was at one point a professional musician. It's funny how many professional musicians I know who have become poker players. But he... anyway, he became a poker player, I think, in the late 80s or 90s. And he played in the Bay Area for a long time. And his kind of emphasis was on the mental aspects of the game. And so he's devoted a lot of time to try to figure out, kind of how he was going to carry himself at the table, how he was going to think about the game, how he was going to kind of gain control over his emotions and over all of that aspect of the game, which is absolutely critical to long-term success. You know, I can explain this is the math, this is how to exploit the errors people make, but the game is, no matter how good you are, the game is intensely frustrating, right? You know, there's tons of ups and downs. The downswings can be very brutal. You know, even again, if they can still be bad, and if you're playing online with thinner edges, they can be just massive downswings. And this frustrates everybody. There's not a single poker player that I know who's serious who says, "What? You know, I don't have a problem with this." You know, that just doesn't exist. Every poker player has struggles with this.
Well, and Phil Hellmuth doesn't he?
I guess not. Maybe if you completely live above it all, then, you know. So Tommy focused on this, and he really tried to perfect this part of his game. And his goal, he tries to play what he calls tiltless poker, which is that he tries to squeeze all of the – he says, well, I have an A game, a B game, and a C game. You know, and maybe my A game is not the best A game, but my goal is to play the A game as much as possible. I'm going to play nothing but my A game, and if I do that, I'm going to have good success. So that was his philosophy as a player. And then as poker exploded, you know, what he – and he's very funny and intelligent, and he's got clever, you know, insights about all this. So, you know, the top players, a lot of the top players when poker blew up and there were these kids, you know, a lot of them 19, 20, 21, 22, who were playing huge online – they were playing for $500,000 at a time, and they were having these enormous swings, and they would go up and down, and these are kids, you know, and they kind of went to Tommy, you know, who is this old grinder from California, and Tommy worked with them as a coach to try to improve that part of their game. So that's what Tommy does. He's written a book, he's written a couple books, but the one I would recommend if you want to check him out is called Elements of Poker. It's a very amusing book, and you'll kind of like, you'll read it, and some people are like, what is this? Is this? And if that's what you know, if that's your take, then, you know, it's not for you. But if it is for you, a lot of people really, really like what Tommy does.
Would it be applicable for, I mean, the emotions, like video poker players or blackjack players or other professional gamblers, in some ways, we all have these bad beats, mm-hmm. and we all have, would. Tom, now this a game book called The Elements of Poker doesn't sound like it would have any useful information in it for a blackjack player.
I think it would. It's not a poker strategy book. It's not about how to play poker hands.
No, it sounds like a like in blackjack. Ian Anderson wrote these books, Turning the Tables and Burning the Tables in Las Vegas, and a lot of it is about his health regimen and a lot and this
picking up hookers.
but it's a very similar kind of thing. A lot of it has to do with the mental, you know, your mental state. Although in blackjack, it should be not as big an issue because you know whether you made the right play or not. You know, whereas in poker, you're always questioning,
right.
Oh, did I play bad? You know, I lost all this money. Was I playing badly?
Right.
All right. So we're talking to Ed Miller about his new book called The Course, Series Hold'em Strategy for Smart Players. We have a few more questions for Ed, but first we're going to take a commercial break. The South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else has. On Mondays through Thursdays in May, you can earn free buffets. Pay 300 points before 1 p.m., get a free lunch buffet. Pay 600 points before 8 p.m., get a free dinner buffet. You can earn both buffets in the same day for the total of 600 points if you earn the first 300 early enough. There was double point day this last Sunday, Mother's Day, and there will be another one in the month, which is on Monday, May 25th, Memorial Day. All video poker machines, no limit. Slot players get more. This month, the South Point is giving extra free play on the weekends if they have your email address. They do this once or twice a year. And how much you get is based on your mailer. The bonuses range between 10 and 20% of the specified coin-in. For example, if you get the $75 a week mailer, you play an additional $750 coin-in, and they'll give you $150 free play. That is a 20% bonus, and on games which are in the 99%+ level anyway, that's worth going in for. They do this several times a year, so if you're local, you might want to give up your email address. It's worth it. At the Palms, they have weekly 7 p.m. drawings on Fridays where winners share $10,000. You do not need to be there to win. You need to claim your prize by midnight or it evaporates. They have multiple entries on Fridays. Between 8 and midnight is 5 times entries, and between 4 and 6:30 in the afternoon, it's 2 times entries. The drawings will continue through the month of May. PFP, Play for Prizes, through this Friday, May 15th, is Walgreens gift cards. For the 2 subsequent weeks, you'll be eligible for fresh and easy gift cards. That's a market. It's in the Vegas area. I don't know if it's outside of this area. The gift cards may be earned and redeemed Monday through Friday at a rate of 0.20%. You keep your points. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play a lot of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year. This allows you to get corrections on both games. It's a good place to practice quick quads, which is what I play on Double Point Stay there at the South Point. You can get the strategy from me or the Wizard of Odds website, but if you really want corrections, you go to videopoker.com. That's the place to get it. The game of the week is Peek and Play Poker. This is a 7 coins per line game, where you get to see the first card off of the pack of 47 cards before you draw. For example, if you were dealt ace, king, queen, jack of hearts, and a little spade, normally you'd throw the spade away, say a prayer, and go for the royal flush. But if you saw the first card off the pack was going to be the ace of clubs, the best play is just to hold the ace of hearts, and now you're starting each of your draws with a pair of aces, and then you're going to get 3 more cards. On this hand, the play was obvious. On many other hands, not so much. Currently, there's no available software to analyze this game, so you have to create your own script to do it or follow the instructions of somebody who does know. On videopoker.com, they have a forum. Currently, there's some pretty good advice on there. It's posted on how to play this game. The particular poster, who calls himself VMan96, is knowledgeable and can do the math. And as near as I can and he's from earlier posts, his posts are spot on. So there are many on that site who are very recreational players, and the things they suggest you should kind of delete. But there are some good players, and it's worth at least scanning periodically.
Is that game available in a casino?
Probably, and where and for what stakes and pay schedules, I don't know. VideoPoker.com does have a place where they list which casinos a game is available on, but it does not include pay schedule information.
which is not particularly of interest to videopoker.com because they get their daily rental fee no matter what the pay schedule is. But for listeners on this site, pay schedules are very valuable. All right. Next week, we're going to have this guy called Ed Miller on, and he's going to talk about daily fantasy sports. So can you give us a two-minute teaser as to what you're going to talk about next week, Ed?
Yeah, so daily fantasy sports is the hot new thing, and that's in quotes. It's, you know, it's blowing up. It's based on sort of fantasy sports, which is, you know, people play baseball and score touchdowns and hit home runs, and that's a different sport. But the point is you get points for them, and then if you get enough points, you win. And in daily fantasy sports, it means you win these contests, which are real money contests. So it's sort of superficially similar to the fantasy sports that people have been playing for 30 years, but in fact, it's quite different. I've been looking at it pretty seriously now for better part of a year. And I think it's extremely beatable, and I think it's I have a lot of thoughts about it. But anyway, that's what Daily Fantasy Sports is, and I will talk all about it next week.
Good.
And we are having that on the show, even though all of the owners of these sites will tell you that this is not gambling. So, but we're going to cover it anyway.
So it's going to be non-gambling with an edge next week.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
All right. Sounds like a statistical tie to me.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So we have about 7 minutes left. Ed, one of the slightly more advanced concepts in your book was called barreling. Mm-hmm. So what we need now is about 7 minutes worth of barreling.
But no pressure.
Sure. Yeah. So this is what I was talking about before, where people play too many bad hands, and then they have to do something with those bad hands. They have to either call with them, they have to fold with them, or they try to bluff with them. And, you know, in the 1-2 skills, I focus on the people that call with them. The idea is, you know, you're going to try to make a good hand, and you're going to try to get these people to call with their weaker hands, and how to go about that systematically. So that's the 1-2 skills. Once you move up to 2-5, you're going to play against people who already have many of those 1-2 skills mastered. That's just the reality. If you go to into a Vegas, you go to the Aria right now, or you go someplace where they play poker, and you sit in a 2-5 game, you know, the people you play with are going to have many of those skills that I call 1-2 skills already down. They're going to not pay people off. They're going to assume people aren't bluffing, et cetera, et cetera. So, but they're still going to play too many hands. So what they do with those hands, especially at the 2-5 level, is they tend to fold them. And what happens is when you get seven of these players all playing against each other and they're all playing too many hands and they all fold them when they don't hit anything, that not a lot of money changes hands because the games play small. You know, I bet you fold, you bet I fold, I bet you fold. You know, the pots stay small and they just kind of push a little bit of money around and there's a little bit of rake. But the reality is that you can do much, much, much better against these players than that because they're folding quite much too often in many circumstances. So here's sort of the basic math on it. Let's say there's $50 in the pot, you know, from pre-flop play, and then a flop comes and you bet $25 into that $50 pot. Well, if everybody folds, then you win the $50, which means that you're betting, you know, one unit to win two, that everyone's going to fold, which means you're getting 2-to-1 odds. And therefore, if everyone folds at least a third of the time, that shows an automatic profit regardless of your cards. Now, you can have extra value because not only can you win that way, you can win also because you make a good hand, or you can win because, okay, they call you now, but then they fold later. So there's multiple ways to win, which can pad your profit. But the basic idea is that you can show an immediate profit if you choose these spots to bet where everyone's going to fold more than a third of the time. So the trick is, well, how do you figure out when that is? How do you figure out when it is that people are going to fold more than a third of the time? And the first answer is, well, it's most of the time. And that's because they're playing too many hands to begin with, and they're inclined to fold them when they miss. And so if you're playing too many hands to begin with, you're going to miss a lot of flops. You're certainly going to miss more than a third of them. And if your default strategy is just to fold every time that happens, then a lot of times these bets will show immediate profits. So those bets are called barrels. So a barrel is a bet that you're making in poker, and you're really just betting because the other players are likely to fold too much. That's kind of what a barrel is. And so it's not a bluff in the way that a lot of people think about bluffs, where you shove the money in and then you put your sunglasses on and you stare people down. Like, it's not that kind of bluff. It's a bluff. You're trying to get people to fold, but it's just like, I'm just betting because you're not going to have a good hand very often. And, you know, and then I get all the money. It's that kind of bluff. So that's what a barrel is. And, the beauty of the game is, because there's community cards that you can see that are available to everybody, you can get a sense for how often people are going to have hands that they're going to like just based on the cards that are out there. Because the cards determine what types of hands are possible. So if there are three diamonds out there, then a flush is possible. But if there's not three diamonds out there, then no flush is possible. And if all the cards are of different suits, there can't even be a flush draw. You know, and same thing with straights. So if there's 10, 9, 8 on the board, you can have a straight with queen jack or jack 7 or 7, 6. But if the board is jack 7, deuce, then the only straight draws that are possible are a couple inside straight draws like 10, 9, 10, 8, and 9, 8. Or king 7, deuce, there's no straight draws possible at all. So you can just look at, and that's called board texture, by the way, what I'm talking about, is looking at the board and the features of the board to figure out what types of hands are possible. So each different board texture has a sort of profile of the different possible hands. And you can study this. There's a software program called Flopzilla. I sell it. It's not mine. I didn't write it, but I sell it. I help the guy who wrote it sell it. It's $35. It's well worth it if you play poker and want to study it. And it aids you in this study. So you can give it a preflop hand range. You could say, okay, this guy's going to play any pair, any ace, these suited hands, these offsuit hands, queen nine, but not 7-4, whatever, right? So you can give it a preflop range, and then you can put any board and it will instantly tell you how often the player has top pair, how often the player has middle pair, how often the player has a flush draw, how often the player has a gut shot straight draw, etc. And this is extremely valuable information because it tells you when you should barrel. Because if you have a sense for, okay, this person is going to fold if I bet $120, if he's got less than top pair or less than a flush draw, say, then it helps to know exactly how often he's going to have less than top pair and less than a flush draw. And fortunately, that information is basically available to you as long as you're looking at the board and you're understanding, you know, and you've gone through that kind of legwork at home to get that understanding. So that's the concept behind barreling, is you're just looking at board textures and you're understanding the percentages roughly that people are going to fold, and then you're making bets when people are going to fold too often.
They have this on apps that you're not allowed to use at the table, I assume.
Yes.
That's one of the things that a lot of poker players don't understand, is that to be good at the game, you do actually have to do homework, like at home. You have to, you know, study some things. So anyway, I should tell our listeners, we welcome your emails, your questions. You can send them to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or at facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge, or you can tweet them at me at RWM21. If you want the show delivered to you every week automatically, you can sign up at iTunes or Stitcher or YouTube or at my site, richardmunchkin.com, for a complete archive of every show that it's ever been done. You can get that at bobdancer.com. So,
very good. All right. We've been talking to Ed Miller about his new book called The Course, Serious Hold'em Strategy for Smart Players. We're going to, for those of you who have not had too much Ed Miller, he's going to be back next week talking about fantasy sports, daily fantasy sports. So thank you, Ed. Richard, go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.